Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. It's the road to South Africa. Who's in the fast lane? Who's heading for a national breakdown? Football Weekly Extra report on the big themes. Are Germany in trouble? What's the German for Schadenfreude? Will the Scots get killed in Amsterdam? Or will they feel at home amongst all the local cloggers? And this one from the vault. Why a diet of frog's legs isn't the only reason Dominic's France could soon be tasting defeat again. All that, plus post Ligue 1 news, and if there's time, a quick mention of England-Slovakia in Football Weekly Extra. Hello there. On board today, much hilarity, Barry Glendenning of Guardian.co.uk.
Hello.
James Dart, also of Guardian.co.uk.
Hi, James.
Hi, James, to you too. And Raphael Honigstein of the Süddeutsche Zeitung. Top comedy German, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
We've already been having a broad-ranging discussion here in the pod on everything from the resemblance of Pippo Inzaghi to Brett Anderson out of Suede to the real reason for Duffy's continuing success. Barry Glendenning, we were stunned to find out that...
Apparently she has a Svengali, yep, who is Bernard Butler,
indeed,
formerly of Suede, which is how Brett Anderson,
right,
popped up in conversation.
Listeners, hands up if you like Duffy. There you go, Barry. Barry was concerned that he might be the only person on the planet who didn't get Duffy.
But I was heartened to find that everyone in this studio doesn't get her either.
No love for Duffy here.
I see from all the hands raised by our listeners. Right. Who's buying her records then?
I don't know. Not pod listeners. And Duffy, if you are a listener, by the way, I have to say, I'm sorry about that. We just don't dig you.
And Duffy, if you're a listener, move your feet when you're dancing. You look ridiculous.
Why? What does she look like when she dances? What does she do?
Well, she looks like somebody whose feet have been nailed to the floor. So
right.
It's very strange.
Bernard Butler there with a hammer in the background.
Possibly.
Right.
No doubt he's coached her in the school of not
But dancing. James, you dished this little nugget out to us. He discovered her, did he?
I don't necessarily know if that's the exact basis for it, but I'm pretty sure he's been working on like this four-year master plan on making her, setting her up for world domination.
How many years have we got to go, can I ask as a concerned listener?
I'd say going by U2, a long time.
Oh, really? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Listen, let's move on to the football then. There's been action, or there's going to be, action from all over. Ooh, he said, biffing his microphone in excitement. Go on then, let's start with England, this Slovakia game. The big story in the build-up has been the call-up of Ledley King and the sending home, subsequently, of said player. Some people asking, was this Capello's first mistake?
Calling him up or sending him
Well, you're
him
calling
home.
Him up, given that he called him up, realised he couldn't train, this is apparently, and then went, oh, well, you better go home then. But it was common knowledge that he couldn't train. So was there something else behind this? Was it Spurs recalling him? What was the story with this?
It supposedly goes back to Steve McLaren calling up and playing King a couple of games ago during his ill-fated tenure in charge of the England team, and a rift being created between Spurs and England, and it seems to have been reopened quite wildly.
Did Capello call up King just to spite Harry Redknapp then?
I'd like to think he did, because I think that shows brilliance on his behalf. I don't necessarily know if he did.
Well, there's no secret that, despite what both parties say, there's no love lost between Harry Redknapp and Fabio Capello, because Redknapp is a bit chippy because he thinks he should have got the job that Capello has, and Capello is a bit chippy because Redknapp was highly critical of his tactics when he worked as a pundit on Capello's opening games in charge. So, I'd love to think that Capello called up King just out of spite, but that would be quite unfair on Ledley King.
Mm.
But the dogs in the street know that he can't train like proper footballer, and that he goes from the Paul McGrath school of playing football, except without the crippling alcohol addiction. I read somewhere in the paper today that Harry wants him fit for next year's UEFA Cup campaign, which seems a bit odd, seeing as he threw his hat at this year's UEFA Cup campaign.
Maybe it's his way of throwing his hat at next year. I'm not sure. Raphael, you wanted to...
Well, I just want to say, I don't believe for a minute that Capello would be perturbed or in any way concerned about what Redknapp says on the box. I think he really doesn't matter to him what he says.
He's a little bit prickly about criticism, Capello. But the secondary question, is there anything else that's remotely interesting about England-Slovakia, the friendly that's going to be played at Wembley on Saturday? Does it answer any questions? I mean, is it beyond the issue of whether he's going to try and put Gerrard and Lampard in the same midfield?
Oh, God.
come back.
Where's my gun? No, there's nothing interesting about it at all. I think that maybe will he play Gerrard in the centre and Rooney wide on the left, or will he not?
Will Leighton Baines get his debut at left back? Will David Beckham beat Bobby Moore's etc. Sean Wright Phillips apparently injured, Peter Crouch apparently injured. But should we talk about England on Monday when they're about to be facing a proper team, Ukraine? They are currently anyway 5 points clear at the top of Group 6. Elsewhere in the happy world of the home nations, and indeed the British Isles, Ireland are taking on Bulgaria. Ireland are currently tied atop of their group, Group 8, with Italy, who they'll be facing next week, which is certainly going to be interesting for their manager, Giovanni Trapattoni. The Bulgaria game has seen a rash of defections, if you like. Bozhinov called out. Berbatov as well, and there's been intrigue about whether he's going to be a late re-inclusion in the side.
Well, this is John O'Shea, really, I think, just being a bit funny and saying, oh, he's not 100% out. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns up. The Bulgaria coach has categorically said that he can't even move his leg for the next 2 weeks. He's not going to be in Dublin. I think this is a bit of a non-story, really. Of course, it's always nice to suggest that the dark night of Old Trafford is sort of keeping players from turning out for the country and doing their patriotic duty, but I can't see it happening.
Indeed so. Bulgaria, currently third in the group, but they haven't won any of their three games so far. They've drawn them all, in fact. They are a whopping 7 points already behind the leading two, Italy and Republic of Ireland, who will be meeting in Bari next Wednesday. Italy, the big story there are a couple of young players coming into the team. Pazzini's made the side as well, but there's no room for Antonio Cassano, despite the fact that he is single-handedly resurrecting Pazzini's career at Sampdoria. Lippi apparently hasn't forgiven Cassano for the days when he used to happily walk out on the under-21s when Lippi was doing his first stint as Italy manager. We'll talk more about Italy on Monday too. Scotland, who are in Amsterdam, taking on Holland. Now, Holland lead Group 9, 5 points clear of Scotland, who are battling the mighty Iceland for the right to go in as a possible second-place team. Scottish, all sorts of injuries. Do you know there's a piece of paper being handed around here?
Yeah, it's what always happens in podcasts. I print off lists of fixtures and bring up newspaper supplements to have in front of me to consult. And then when I go to consult them, they're gone because someone else has nicked them and passed them across to Honigstein at the other side of the table. Because he's
was
far too lazy to bring his
to
own.
To bring stuff in for us.
I think that's so sweet that Barry, who feigns disinterest with all this podding business, actually goes to bother printing up stuff and researching.
Why do I find it? I did research on the Ireland-Bulgaria match. We were so busy talking about Ledley King's non-appearance at a non-friendly encounter that we've just brushed past Ireland v Bulgaria with a token mention to Dimitar Berbatov's absence. And now we're talking about Scotland against Holland.
Barry, sorry, I'm going to put my shit in reverse and go back and take another pop at Ireland-Bulgaria.
No, it's
have we lost the
moment
charge?
Has passed there.
For the listeners.
Just don't ask me anything about Wales, Northern Ireland or Scotland. It's a subject that I won't have a clue about. The Republic of Ireland is one subject we cover in the pod that I might actually know something about.
What was
about.
The information you weren't that you're now not going to tell us about?
Not tell
him. Was it about Aidan McGeaney? Is he going to be fit?
I don't know.
Is he going to include someone creative in the midfield? That's the usual question about Ireland.
No, he's going to include Glenn Whelan and Keith Andrews,
right?
Who are not particularly creative, but he likes them. He's a big fan of their work. Aidan McGeady is a 50-50 chance to be fit, I think, as is Shea Given.
Right, okay.
But I think Given is far more likely to play than McGeady.
Right, and up front, Robbie Keane?
One would presume so, yes.
Hmm. Okay. And, are you confident about this game, Barry?
I am very confident. Right. I think Ireland have had a lot of luck in this campaign so far, and their luck seems to be continuing because Bulgaria have a lot of injuries. The two Petrovs are out. Berbatov is out, as we said already. Who's it? Bozhinov is out. And Tunchev could also be out. So, yeah.
We're all a bit bemused. Who's Tunchev?
He is a Leicester City defender who plays for Bulgaria.
All right. Well, Raphael Honigstein didn't know him, so score one for Barry Glendening. Outstanding, outstanding. All right. We were mentioning Scotland amongst all that. They're taking on Holland, who beat them 6-0 last time. A bit worrying. The Scots, though, have already made the obligatory reference to Archie Gemmell and the victory over France in Paris. Are they going to get absolutely smashed again? Is there any reason they might not get smashed?
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Well, I can think of one.
Go on, Bert
van Marwijk is in charge, and he's really a terrible manager.
All right.
He's already fallen out with some of the players. He's very negative.
Isn't that, you know, job one, you know, yeah, when you're at Holland managing four out with players?
Yes. No, because, you know, he's brought back Mark van Bommel, who is his son-in-law. And it hasn't gone down that well with some of the other players because he was seen as a bit of yesterday's man. They had quite a creative midfield, even though they had two players who were mostly defensive. But now one of them is Van Bommel, so it's not all happy in the Dutch camp.
One thing Scotland do have in their favour is that for the first time in his tenure, George Burley will get to play Scott Brown, Barry Ferguson and Darren Fletcher together. And they might give the Dutch something to think about in midfield.
Mm. Certainly might.
Not much, I'd imagine, but a bit.
All right. And then lastly on the home nation. Well, not lastly, actually, because there's Wales, of course. Northern Ireland taking on Poland. Northern Ireland currently second in Group 3, which is led by Slovakia. But Poland among the many teams who are on the same points as them. You've got Slovakia, then Northern Ireland, Poland, the Czechs and Slovenia. And Northern Ireland have played an extra game. So they're not looking that clever there.
Well, if Northern Ireland have in their favour the poisonous atmosphere of Windsor Park, which is always, you know, stands to them, but they're doing okay in that group. The only bad result they've had is a 2-0 defeat away to Slovakia.
But they've played rubbish teams so far, haven't they?
Well, they drew with the Czech Republic at home, and I think they've beaten San Marino twice. So,
the home draw with the Czechs. I apologise.
They're going to need some big results away from home if they're going to get anywhere near qualification in that group, which is a big ask because that's definitely been their weak point.
Mm. Indeed so. Well, I think we've got time in part one to come on to Wales. Raphael, as you were just pointing out, Duffy's taken a hammering already in this pod. Will her Welsh fellow nationals fare similarly against the Finns? Not, you know, the ones out of Crowded House. I mean the Finnish national team.
Well, the Finnish national team are not too bad. They gave Germany a torrid time in Helsinki. It was a 3-3 draw. Finland were up three times and Germany just about struggled to get a draw thanks to Miroslav Klose hat-trick. So they are very, very useful despite not having any really recognisable names apart from Mikael Forsell and Sami Hyypiä, of course. But they're a good unit and I think they're probably a better footballing side than Wales, so not going to be easy at all.
It's a big ask. I mean, Finland were one of the best teams that didn't qualify from the last Euro 2008 qualifying groups, where I think it was Portugal that might pip them. And again, on paper, it's going to be a real big ask for Wales.
Right, okay. Well, there you go. Germany leading the group, 4 points clear of Russia and Wales. Russia have a game in hand on the Welsh, as do Finland, who are currently in fourth place. But, you know, they're all rivals for the second place, or potentially even the first. Germany have Liechtenstein this weekend.
Who?
Raphael. Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein.
Oh, sorry, Liechtenstein. And then Wales on Wednesday, is it? But Germany, European Championship runners-up, you've had some poor results in the friendlies. Does it matter at all? Does it?
It did matter because the performances were really poor.
Right.
And not just the results.
Beaten by England
at home and by Norway at home. And it was really, really rubbish football, bringing back memories of the dark ages of sort of Euro 2000. And that's why there is a bit of pressure. Jogi Löw has asked everybody to do a fitness test. He wants to check the fitness on every single player. That hasn't gone down too well with the league and the club managers because, you know, it is a sort of a question mark behind their work. And that is, there is a lingering conflict and tension between national team and club team, because whenever Jogi Löw comes out with something like, in England they do play faster, we have to see that we improve, the league managers feel as if their work is being criticised, which it is, really, to be fair. But, I mean, Liechtenstein is going to be a formality. The question is, can we get triple figures? Probably not.
Never ever forget that the Republic of Ireland once drew with Liechtenstein.
Right.
Nil-nil.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Well, plenty more international action out there. And in a second or two, we're going to be dialing up top French correspondent Ben Littleton, who's going to tell us about the extraordinary events in Ligue 1 and also the hapless Raymond Domenech's latest misadventures on the France bench. For all the latest news on international and club football, of course, guardian.co.uk/football is the place to go. Ben Littleton now joins us. Ben.
Hello.
Hi, Ben. Welcome to Football Weekly. First clear-up is a bit of a mystery for us. My little printout says that France are in fourth place in Group 7, whereas James Dart reckons that they're actually above Austria in third.
They are actually in third place on goal difference only. They did actually lose to Austria in the first game of the qualifiers, but they've conceded 6 goals as opposed to Austria's 7.
Ah, all right then.
Isn't it head-to-head that counts?
Well, not according to the FIFA website, Rafi.
Put him in his box. Good. Excellent. Now, third place in the group, Serbia and Lithuania currently romping away with it, all 5 points clear of France and Austria and Romania, although France do have a game in hand, as do Romania. But it looks like Dominic's heading for yet more disasters. Is that right, Ben?
It's not looking good for him. I mean, he was lucky to keep his job after the Euros, and we remember what a disaster France were in that tournament. And the pressure has really not stopped mounting on him since then. As I said, they lost their first qualifier in Austria, and they then beat Serbia, but were 2-0 down in Romania before they clawed back to draw 2-2. And they approached these games really needing to win them both to ease the pressure on Dominic.
All right, OK. Are they home or away against Lithuania this weekend?
They're away.
Well, they're away on Saturday, and then they're home to Lithuania on Wednesday. But there's some advantage to being away, because the crowd actually booed France in their last home game, which was in Marseille when they lost to Argentina. And so the pressure is really getting to the players as well. The crowd are turning against them. So there might be some advantage in playing the first match away.
Ben, I noticed during the week that Patrice Evra was complaining about the French crowd, saying that their home matches are more like away games because the away teams invariably bring more supporters who are louder than the French fans.
Yeah, that's right, Barry. When the games are played at the Stade de France, you don't really get the passionate French supporters that you might get elsewhere in France. There's a lot of corporate seats, and it's seen as more of an event rather than a sports occasion. So the Stade de France crowd are not that knowledgeable or passionate, really, and that does get to the players, and I think that's what Evra was getting at. They were hoping for a better reaction in Marseille, but because Argentina were there and Maradona is a favoured son of Marseille, because he once said he almost joined them, everyone was supporting Marseille.
There's a bit of a pundit off here, Ben, in the pod, because Barry and Rafa are both itching to ask you follow-up questions. I say we go with Rafa.
Thank you, James. Very sensible choice. Ben, my question is Dominic doing anything really silly or obviously bad at the moment? Is he playing people in the wrong position, calling up the wrong people, or is it just the general sense of French don't turn up for games?
Did he ever get married to his girlfriend as well? What happened with that?
She never said yes.
She never said yes?
She never said yes.
All right.
Yeah, still unmarried. Yeah. To answer your question, Rafi, which is an interesting one, there are issues that Dominic has not resolved in every part of the pitch, really. Galas is the first-choice centre-back, but he hasn't got a regular partner. Dominic doesn't like Mexes, and there's some talk that Scalacci might step in this weekend. In midfield, he persists in playing Toulalon and Diarra, mainly because Vieira is always injured. But those two players are very similar and don't really take hold of a game in a way that someone like Vieira can do. And up front, there's a debate about Benzema again, who's great for Lyon, great in the Champions League, but in France, he hasn't really imposed himself. He's only scored, I think, 4 in 20. And with Anelka out, it's his big chance this weekend as well.
All right, nice one, Ben. Let's hear if Barry's question's as interesting as Rafa's was.
Well, it's not really a question. It's more just an observation I made yesterday when I was looking through, putting my fond of a punt hat on. And I think there's two absolutely outstanding bets in this weekend's World Cup qualifiers. They're both in this group. Serbia, 5-2 to beat Romania, is a magnificent price because Romania are a mess. And Lithuania, 6-1. Top of the group, Lithuania, at home against rubbish France, and their 6-1 shot. I think the two of those and a little double could be in clover.
Well, I certainly think one of those will come off. I think Serbia will beat Romania. Even if France do win these games in hand, and the two games against Lithuania, they're still going to have to get past Serbia because they've got to go to Belgrade and play Serbia there. And under Radiantic, Serbia are, well, sweeping everyone aside, really. And I think they'll win in Romania as well. So the chances are that France might win the two games in Lithuania, but still not top that group.
Listen, you know what, Ben, we can't get you on without talking about Ligue 1, which has emerged, and I quote from somebody else's website, as the closest run championship in Europe, with every team bar one in either a title or a relegation battle. 7 teams in with a realistic chance of winning the title. 10 could go down. Only Nice really have only the Europa or Intertoto Cup slot to play for. The extraordinary thing at the top there, let me see, Lyon, yes, still top as they have been for the last decade or so, but Marseille a point behind Bordeaux, and Lyon still have to go to Bordeaux, is that right? Are only 3 points behind. And Toulouse, lots of posters want you to talk about Toulouse.
Well, Lyon not only have to go to Marseille, James, they've got to go to Bordeaux, and they've got to play Toulouse and PSG, so they've got the hardest running of them all. They're only 1 point ahead, as you say. I fancy Bordeaux to go on and win it because they've got the momentum, the easiest run-in. But Toulouse are looking dangerous. They've just beaten PSG 4-1. They beat Bordeaux 3-0 a few weeks ago. And under their new coach, Alain Casanova, they're looking pretty dangerous. I mean, they've got a lot of critics in France because they don't play that attractive style of football. In fact, one French president said they play 10 men behind the ball with one up front. And it's working because their strikers, André Pierre Gignac, who's just been called up to the squad, he's scored 18 of their 37 goals. And as long as he's scoring, they're winning.
And PSG, who are back in the mix, courtesy of the man who helped establish Lyon as the dominant force, called Paul Le Guin.
Yeah, that's right. And the title race this season is especially interesting because it's set against the backdrop of all the coaches really not committing their futures to their clubs beyond this season. There's a lot of talk that Le Guin will leave PSG at the end of the season. Eric Gerets is refusing to commit his future to Marseille as well. Guy Lacombe at Rennes is doing the same. And Laurent Blanc only recently signed his contract. There were a lot of talk that he would be the man to eventually replace Dominic.
Interesting. Ben, that's fantastic. Many, many thanks for joining us and filling us in on all of that. And best of luck. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Cheers, Ben. So what, we were mentioning nations in trouble. Portugal under Carlos Queiroz are in all sorts of hot water in Group 1. Yeah, look, they're down in fourth place. It reads Denmark 7, Hungary 7, Albania 6, Portugal 5. Portugal drew against Albania. Albania only had 10 men. They lost at home to Denmark. They've just been beaten 6-2 by Brazil in a friendly. Apparently Queiroz is not looking too secure in the Portuguese job. I just mention it, you know. Another big nation in trouble, Cristiano Ronaldo and all that.
Well, he's also been criticising the players for buying diamonds before winning anything. I wonder who he'd be referring to there.
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo's won plenty.
True, but not this season.
That is true. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet.
No, just saying, it wouldn't be the first time that Carlos Queiroz has struggled as the top man, as the top dog in a football role, rather than taking that secondary position.
Well, indeed so. Posts. No Fit State says, he's commenting about Monday. He said it was disappointing that we only brushed over Stephen Taylor's forearm use thereof with nothing more than a mild quip. This is Arshavin basically elbowed him in the face. And no question that it was intentional because he basically sized him up before laying the elbow on him. How can the pod virtually ignore a premeditated assault on the player, yet at the same time give serious consideration to extending Rooney's ban for a temper tantrum? It's a fair point, No Fit State, and especially because Stephen Taylor's not new to this kind of business.
It isn't really a fair point, is it? Because I think Scott's... from what I heard, Scott Murray, and knowing him as I do, I would suspect Scott Murray's... assertion that Rooney should get a longer ban was very much tongue-in-cheek.
Right, no, we didn't really comment that much on Stephen Taylor, apart from suggesting that his injury was basically a fractured elbow from Arshavin's face, or something like that. But anyway, Mr. Asterix, meanwhile, posting in, saying, for the first time ever in the history of the world, Australia could be the first nation to qualify for the World Cup this next Wednesday, April Fool's Day, when they take on Uzbekistan. A win would not quite make them mathematically certain to qualify. Why is everyone else exchanging looks as though...
Because Australia, they have their own little group, the Australia group.
But they could be...
So they play like some pub team, Uzbekistan.
Right.
Some
guessing not too many pubs in Uzbekistan, but on you go.
Yeah, well, I said
that's
some pub teams
though.
And Uzbekistan.
Oh, and Uzbekistan. Sorry.
Yeah, it's like the easiest group imaginable.
Yeah, I know, but usually they're tail enders. They have to wait until the Uruguay or whoever pitch up in Sydney and then... etc., or Iran or whoever. But this time they could be the first team through, and not, you know, apart from
first,
South Africa.
First team to qualify, first team to get knocked out. Well, what a double whammy that'll be.
Moving on, anyway. Cable 1973, we mentioned Arshavin. A question for the pod. Has signing Arshavin kick-started Arsenal's season and thus actually saved them money because it gets them into the top four, presumably?
Well, it would certainly save a lot of money or make them a lot of money if they make that fourth spot.
How much did he cost? 15?
Yeah, it was very cheap, actually, by...
Do you get 15 million for getting straight into the Champions League?
Yes, you get about 20.
It's worth the money, but I mean, Arshavin hasn't single-handedly taken Arsenal into the top four. It's purely down to Villa's capitulation. Yes. And how
has the signing of Arshavin caused Villa to slump?
All right, there's your answer then, Cable 1973. Dippler, naughty name 11. I can't believe Argel Fuchs, Raphael Scheidt and Mario Turdo were left out of said naughty name 11.
Wasn't there a time once, I think Celtic were going to make a signing, I think it might have been Raphael Scheidt, and it would have meant their back three was Weir, Tebbly, Scheidt. But it never happened.
That's
and Scottish football was the poorer for it.
Indeed so. Stilton, final post. I hope Jerez can hold it together for the rest of the season. Now their president has resigned. He resigned, as we mentioned, on Monday after being caught trying to shoot up, or his driver was trying to shoot up a brothel in Jerez.
Those pesky chauffeurs. Good help, it's so hard to
find. After he'd been refused entry to said house of pleasure. Anyway, Stilton says, I hope they can hold it together because I'd hate to see the headline, no happy finish for Jerez come the end of the campaign. Very nice, Stilton. I've got a little note here. James Dart, you want to talk about Dave Whelan and his unprovoked attack on Mike Ashley.
It seems like he's a good person to be talking about, Mike Ashley being unfit to be a club chairman at times. And it was just sort of brought back into the news yesterday with Dave Whelan's hubristic naming of Wigan's new stadium.
The DW Stadium.
DW Stadium.
I think
Stadium.
It's very understated just to do the initials. It's very classy.
It's like monogrammed stadium.
Yeah,
it's
quite nice.
He's named his stadium after our favourite listener, David Wong from Hong Kong.
Hey, DN Wong from Hong Kong. He also said, because he was complaining about Mike Ashley, with whom he's got a bit of previous. No, didn't Mike Ashley get him into trouble legally for having run a cartel with Freddie Shepherd and all sorts of other things?
Well, they're both in the leisurewear industry and... Whelan definitely was fined in the past for price fixing.
I think Mike Ashley gave testimony or something there. Mm-hmm.
Freddie Shepherd, who Dave Whelan described as a very dignified man.
He said, whatever you think of Freddie Shepherd, the man has dignity. Knocking up in a replica shirt in a Spanish brothel, complaining about... What did
the state of women from Newcastle, calling them dogs.
When I first went in there just after Freddie Shepherd had left and Mike Ashley had bought it, said Dave Whelan, referring to Newcastle, the boardroom, he turned up, Mike Ashley did, in the boardroom in a pair of jeans, a pair of trainers and a replica shirt, Whelan said. Immediately he did that, the club's gone. You don't do that in football, he's got no class whatsoever.
So it's all right to sell, make your millions selling trainers and replica shirts at exorbitant prices, but just as long as you don't wear them to... anything. That's kind of like what Ratner did with his jewellery business.
Yeah. It's all right to belittle the fans who buy the stuff, but when the chairman wears it, then it's really bad.
It's wrong, isn't it? Just wrong. Wrong, listeners.
It's Dave, tough for you're us listening, sitting here DW. Being right about everything all the time. Model.
Right.
We never, no hypocrites in this pod.
Indeed.
We never contradict ourselves.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Moving along, CONMEBOL, which is the name for the South American World Cup qualifying group football thing, etc. They've got games going on. Brazil are facing Ecuador at high altitude in Quito, and then they're going to be hosting Peru. And their players turned up and kicked off proceedings with a 12-hour all-night party, according to reports. Surprisingly, Robinho and Adriano are believed to have been involved, as were various top models. And according to one website... one of those, Tran, etc. Yeah.
Do they have to be top models?
Yeah, according to the website, that's pretty much.
Do they have to be transsexuals?
I think it's probably, you've got the beer, yeah. You've got transsexual. Oh, curses, forgot. Here's the number, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think it's pretty much a given, isn't it? Barbecue, beer, Ladyboy. So nice to know that traditions continue there. Argentina, woo, Diego Maradona's first competitive game in charge of them. Good wins in the friendlies against Scotland and France, but they're at home to Venezuela, and then they have to travel to La Paz, Bolivia.
Which is up high.
How high?
I don't know, 3,000 feet?
3,600 metres.
Oh, 3,600 metres. Right. Geography is never my strong point.
Right.
But it's a tough one because Bolivia are second from bottom of the group, but their home record obviously is very good because most teams that come there, the players aren't able to breathe, and which makes playing football at a top high level, in every sense of the word, quite difficult.
Mm. Excellent. Very good. Well, there you go. Who knows how Argentina will get on. That game coming up next week, of course. Spain have coming up a couple of games with Turkey, who are behind them in Group 5. Spain leading the way with 4 wins out of 4, 12 points on board. Turkey currently second, 4 points behind. Let's dial up Dr. Sid for his thoughts on that and more. Hi, Sid. We were just discussing ladyboys.
Yeah. Is that why you've rung me, or have you rung me to stop you discussing it?
Right. No. What are your thoughts on the subject? Are they an issue in Spanish football, ladyboys?
In Spanish football, are they an issue? No, I'm not sure they are.
Right.
And they are. However, well, I wouldn't go so far as to say ladyboys, but drag queens in particular are extremely popular in Spain. Yes. On Spanish TV, they're the height of cultural sophistication.
Really? I have to say, and curtailing this, that we have a noble tradition of it in British television as well. Lily Savage.
That's true, yeah.
Danny LaRue, Edna Everidge, and the one who used to say, "Ooh, you are awful," but I can't remember his stroke her name.
I'm sure someone will turn up on the blog and tell you.
Well, thanks, listeners, if you could do that. But regarding those who kind of crossing gender divides. Of course, there was that famous footballer, wasn't it? Who was it? Who was it? Guti, who discovered his girlfriend was.
Ah, well, yeah, Guti. Not... Guti, who had a relationship with Bibi Fernandez, who's an actress, but used to be an actor by the name of Manolo. And there's a famous chant that goes around some Spanish stadiums, apart from the obvious and fairly basic one. There's a slightly more convoluted one, which basically says, "Guti, Guti, don't be thick. He's not called Bibi, he's called Manolo." But in Spanish it rhymes, so it's a much better chant.
Right. I'm glad it doesn't rhyme in English. We actually called you up to talk about Spain and their games with Turkey, which is probably a bit dulled because Spain are flying along, aren't they?
Yeah, and this is the one game, I suppose, or the two games, once to the point where there's a feeling that Spain might actually have it difficult. And Vicente del Bosque said something in midweek that everybody was kind of quick to say he's wrong about. But, of course, he's got a point. He said, look, let's calm down a bit, because at some stage we're going to get beaten. At some stage we're going to lose and everyone will go bonkers.
Okay, well, that's...
They haven't been beaten, basically, since they came back from losing to Northern Ireland in qualifying for the European Championships.
Wow, okay. I suspect there'll be a lot of interest in England to Torres' fitness and whether he's used or whether he's spared or what the situation is there. A lot of worried people on Merseyside.
Yeah, and also in Spain to some extent, you know, because when England played Spain, of course, Torres was called into the squad. He played 60-odd minutes, and there was a real kind of... There was a real sense of tension between Vicente del Bosque and Rafa Benitez. Now, obviously, publicly, del Bosque, because he's always extremely diplomatic, was saying, no, there's no problem. I've spoken to Rafa Benitez. It's absolutely fine. We're working with the club doctors at Liverpool, as well as our own doctors, to talk about Torres. But privately, del Bosque was a little bit irritated at Rafa's attitude. I think this is typical, isn't it? Every coach who's at a club thinks the national team is a pain, and every national team manager thinks all the club coaches are a pain in the arse, because, of course, they're defending different interests.
Indeed they are. A couple of questions from the post for you. Faker74 says, get Sid to talk about, please, the rather fantastic gesture made by the Villarreal president. Main industry in that town being the manufacture of tiles. The collapse of the construction industry means a lot of the locals, therefore fans, are now out of work. So he said that anyone who's currently a season ticket holder and has been laid off will get into games free next season. Fantastic.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, that's absolutely right. The whole area around Villarreal and the province's Castellón is really rooted in tourism, construction and ceramics, which means things like tiles, toilets, sinks, that sort of stuff. And a lot of that industry is actually his own family industry, a company called Parmesa, which is very, very important in the whole of the Valencia region. And yeah, this crisis could be very, very big. And very bad news for people in the region. So he's decided that what he'll do is that season ticket prices will be frozen for next season. Anyone someone who currently has a season ticket and has it next year and ends up out of work either between now and the start of the season or even during next season will then be given their season ticket for free. What he's also done is he's set up a kind of fund into which people who want to help the club and therefore enable them to make this gesture without it costing the club, without it costing the possibility of buying players and so on, can also add money to this fund. And he's inviting directors and players and the fans who do have money to kind of add money into this fund. So it's kind of a collective, if you like, a kind of a sense of collective identity. And his point was, you know, in difficult times, the last thing you want to do is take away from fans the one thing they have that perhaps makes them happy, which is the football.
I mean, whilst that's a fantastic gesture, are the cheapest tickets for the Arsenal Champions League game, are they about £72?
The Arsenal thing, you know, in a way it fits a pattern that Spanish clubs do a lot, which is there isn't... Tickets aren't set up like they are in England in categories of games. Basically, a game comes along, what should we charge for this game? And they know that they'll sell out, and therefore the prices for the Arsenal fans, at least, are going to be very high, just as they are when Barcelona and Real Madrid turn up.
Mm. Sid, we've talked about Valencia's problems quite often, but I've read recently that they're so strapped for cash that they've started hiring out their players to events like weddings and things like that. You can actually book them. Is this true? And if it is, how much is a bar mitzvah with David Villa?
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's absolutely fantastic. It's Morientes available for weddings and bar mitzvahs. It's brilliant.
We can get him on the pod, maybe.
Well, I wonder how much we'd have to pay. We can ask, can't we? Can we get Morientes on the pod, preferably while performing a bar mitzvah?
I don't think that's wrapped for cash. the 40 but quid they get from us.
But this is the amazing thing about this, isn't it? You think, well, this is... The crisis is so bad that they're doing this. But as you say, how much can you seriously expect to get for hiring out a player for a bar mitzvah or a wedding? Or maybe the player can kind of, you know, make animal shapes out of balloons at his local McDonald's or something. It's quite bizarre.
What do they do with the weddings? Like,
well, probably try and run away with a bride if they're like most footballers. And it's a weird one, this. I mean, it's sort of true in so much as nobody's really genuinely talking about, you know, hire a player for your party. But what basically the club have said is the players have to recognise that they are employees of a club. And therefore, if we ask them to do an event which is designed to help the economics of the club, then we expect them to do it. Now, this came to a head not very long ago when Fernando Morientes was at a sponsors meeting and he turned round having been pretty much dragged off the treatment table to go to this sponsors meeting. And then one of the first questions was, what is it? You must be very pleased to be here. And he said, yes, it appears the sponsors now are more important than my recuperation as a player.
Wow.
So the players aren't too happy about it.
So just before you go, though, have you got a house guest at the moment?
Yes, I do have a house guest at the moment, yeah.
Is it podcasting Sean Ingle?
It could well be podcasting Sean Ingle, although he's not actually in my house at the moment because he's, get this for culture, he's gone to a gallery.
Well, what else are you going to do in Madrid?
Well, yes, quite. Yeah.
And is he there with wife and child or on his own?
Yes, he is, yep.
Oh. Did Sean seem in any way nervous at the presence of a canine, given his own unfortunate precedence with species?
Yeah, he was running away, holding his backside, screaming. The dog was actually relatively well-behaved with Sean's little one.
All right.
What do you mean, relatively well-behaved?
Well, it barked but didn't bite.
All right.
Right, okay, good. Much like Sean himself. Well, there you go, what a treat was.
Has he been doing press-ups in the corner of the room?
Not yet, no. Maybe he has and I just haven't caught him.
He's only just had
yet,
a child. Who's you want another one for?
Oh, you're such a pervert.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Well, listen, we look forward to catching you on Monday for an update on all that and more. Thank you very much, Sid. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Crikey, well, on that extremely high note, let's bring today's Football Weekly Extra to an end. Barry, James and Raphael, many, many thanks for joining us. Thanks to producer Pete for putting it into shape and shipping it out, and you, the listeners, for digesting it there at home or in your listening place of choice. We'll be back on Monday. See you soon.